An underfunded department that no one wants to chair, a crumbling building, more than one failed relationship, a stalled career, and many, many letters of recommendation to write. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The new novel, Dear Committee Members, takes us deep into the dysfunction of academia through the letters of a disgruntled professor of creative writing and literature at the fictional Payne University, a small liberal arts college in the Midwest. This hour, I'll talk with Julie Schumacher, author of the book, and John Rayburn, professor emeritus of American Studies at the University of Iowa. We also want to hear your stories. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Jason Fitker is a professor of creative writing and literature at a small Midwestern liberal arts college. His writing career has stalled. His relationships have failed. He has very little respect for most of his colleagues. He has little patience with the vast majority of his students, and he spends a lot of time writing letters. The new, very funny novel, Dear Committee Members, is told entirely through Professor Fitker's letters. And the woman behind the novel is Julie Schumacher. She teaches creative writing at the University of Minnesota, and she's on the line with us today. Hello, Julie.
Hello, how are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And you will be reading from this book tonight at Prairie Lights in Iowa City at 7 o'clock. What was your inspiration for writing a book that is made up entirely of letters from an aging professor?
Well, these are all letters of recommendation that Professor Fitker writes. And this is the only time I've written something, and when the idea came to me before the character. I was teaching an undergraduate creative writing class, telling my students that they could write a work of fiction in the form of a to-do list or a series of emails or a recipe, a letter, and one of my students said, "What form would you choose if you were going to pick some particular form or structure?" And somewhat facetiously, I said, "I should write a book in the form of letters of recommendation because I'm always writing them for you guys." And then I thought, maybe I should try that as a kind of a writing exercise. I always assign writing exercises to my students, and I thought, why not assign one to myself and see what happens?
Well, so people can get a little bit of a flavor of the novel and an idea of who Jason Fitker is. Let's start with a letter from the book. And this letter is dated September 14th, 2009. It's to his department chair, who's, I guess we'll find out a little bit more about him in the letter, but his department chair is not a member of the English department. He is a sociologist who has taken on the role of chair of the English department at this fictional Payne University. And here's the letter.
"Dear Ted, you've asked me to write a letter seconding the nomination of Franklin Kentrell for Payne's coveted Davidson chair. I assume Kentrell is behind this request. No sane person would nominate a man whose only recent publications consist of personal genealogical material, and who wears visible sock garters in class. All he lacks is a white tin basin to resemble a 19th century barber. But if you want me to endorse his nomination in order to keep him quiet and away from your office, you will find him as persistent and maddening as a fly. You may excerpt the following sentences and affix my name to them. Professor Franklin Kentrell has a singular mind and a unique approach to the discipline. He is sui generis. The Davidson chair has never seen his like before." A word on the call for official written letters of recommendation, Ted. I hope for the sake of all concerned you will cut back on these as much as possible. The LOR has become a rampant absurdity, usurping the place of quick consultation and the two-minute phone call, not to mention the teaching and research that faculty were supposedly hired to perform. I haven't published a novel in 6 years. Instead, I fill my departmental hours casting words of praise into the bureaucratic abyss, on multiple occasions serving on awards committees, was actually required to write LORs to myself. Keeping my temper under wraps for the present, J. P.S. I couldn't help but notice, following the departure of the economist, that our tech help office has largely vacated as well. A single employee, the appropriately named Mr. Duffy Knapp, left behind to respond to faculty requests for computer assistance. This surly somnambulist rarely deigns to answer the most basic of questions and treats with exhausted dismay any individual who is not a specialist in computer arcana. Might it be possible to exchange the Napper for someone more civil and less lethargic? P.P.S. Thank you for your attention to my office window, which now closes, but due to an impressive crack in the frame, presumably caused by the ear-splitting construction on the second floor, rainwater is trickling merrily down the inside of the glass, and as I type these words, entering the rusted slats of the heater. You might want to send someone to take a look.
A letter from the book, Dear Committee Members, a novel by Julie Schumacher, read by Iowa Public Radio's Dennis Reese. And Julie, as you thought about writing a novel in the form of letters of recommendation, how did Jason Fitger, come into your mind?
Well, I knew that if I was going to have a book composed entirely of letters of recommendation written by one person, that person would, in order for me to portray him as a character, have to be an egotist and a bit of a jerk, an inappropriate person, because in order to define him, I would have to have him talk about himself in the letters he's supposed to be writing for the benefit of other people. So automatically he came into my mind as an egomaniac, a person who you really would not want to write you an actual letter. He's extremely inappropriate.
And he also gives us insight into a lot of experiences in academia that a lot of people can relate to. Now, of course, not everyone is like Professor Fitger, and that's good for all of us.
Yes.
But he does have a lot of experiences that I know a lot of people have also experienced. And this hour, we're going to talk about this world of academia, and we'd love for you to join our conversation as well. If this is something you can relate to, if you have a story to share, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can post on our Facebook page. And Julie, also, I want to bring into the conversation John Rayburn. He's Professor Emeritus of American Studies at the University of Iowa and a man who's very experienced in the world of academia. John, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
And I don't want to put anybody on the spot. Names can be changed to protect the innocent or the not so innocent this hour. But Julie, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on in Jason Fitger's life that come out through his letters. One of them is that he is in this English department at Payne University, which is a small liberal arts college, not a particularly well-regarded liberal arts college in the Midwest, and he finds himself in this department that I think it's safe to say is not the shining jewel of Payne University.
No, he is. Fitger is angry about a number of things, and his anger shines through in his letters. He's angry that his program in creative writing is being downsized and possibly eliminated. He's angry about the construction in his building. The building is being refurbished for the economists, but he's constantly subject to debris, asbestos, noise, wrecking balls swinging outside the window of his classroom.
Right, and the rest of the building has been evacuated, as he puts it. But all of the other people in their offices have been removed from the building, except for this beleaguered English department. They're staying through the entire renovation.
That's right. And he's angry about a number of personal things. His love life is not going very well. His literary career is at a standstill because he spends all his time writing letters for other people, he claims. So he's angry and irascible about a number of different things.
And so, John, and both of you, I'd love both of you to give me some insight into this. So you're in an academic department, and sometimes I know that professors are extremely busy working very hard on all of the many things that they need to do. And this novel gives us some insight into some of the many things that they need to do beyond teaching, which I know is a difficult part of being a professor. There are so many other demands on your time as well. But the things that are going on higher up in the university are often invisible to the people who are in departments. So, John, over the years that you've spent in academia, do a lot of people try hard to guess what's going on in the future of their department?
Certainly do. In fact, it's a pretty regular conversation that goes on, I think, in almost all departments. And usually, if they don't know what is going on higher up, they think they do. So they will project fantasies of people trying to undo them. Sometimes they're not fantasies. Sometimes they're true. And so that Fitger's bile is something I'm pretty familiar with. Both in myself and in my colleagues. I mean, people, especially in the humanities, feel like nowadays they're being not just downsized, but eliminated in some cases. Mm-hmm. And so Fitger's complaints are ones that I think most of the readers of the book who themselves are teachers, especially in the humanities, are going to sympathize with and empathize with.
Well, and I'm sure you mentioned, I mean, talking to other colleagues, trying to figure out what's going on with university higher-ups. Fitger has isolated himself to the point where he doesn't get to talk to other colleagues at all. But, I mean, Julie, I can imagine that you have spent much of your life in academia. You're not unfamiliar with these kind of reading of the tea leaves that people do either.
No, I am familiar with it. And I think, you know, the book is not intended to be any sort of call to arms or a manifesto, but I think it does reflect my own feeling that there, you know, this is a bit of a time of crisis for higher ed in the liberal arts and humanities. We hear so much about the STEM fields, and justifiably, parents and students are very concerned about the cost of higher education. Everyone is concerned about the treatment of adjunct faculty who are not paid the wages that tenure-track faculty deserve. There are a lot of problems in higher ed right now, and I think a lot of people feel the squeeze. Fitger rages against the squeeze.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with novelist Julie Schumacher. Her latest novel is called Dear Committee Members. It's told entirely through letters of recommendation from Professor Jason Fitger at a small liberal arts college in the Midwest. She'll be reading tonight at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City at 7 o'clock. John Rayburn is also here. He's Professor Emeritus of American Studies at the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the new, very funny novel, Dear Committee Members. It is told entirely through letters of recommendation written by a beleaguered professor at a small Midwestern college. The author is Julie Schumacher. She teaches creative writing at the University of Minnesota. She'll be reading tonight at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City at 7 o'clock. John Rayburn is also here. He's a professor emeritus of American Studies at the University of Iowa. He also was a professor of English, chaired both departments at different times. And we'd love to hear from you as well. I know a lot of you have stories about life in academia. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa at iowapublicradio.org. Tell us about a sign that you got that showed that the department you were working in was not one of the favorite departments at the university. We're going to talk about department chairs. We're going to talk a lot more about letters of recommendation, and we would love to hear your stories. And now, Julie, one of the very funny twists in this book is that the department chair at this time is not a professor of English. It is a sociologist who has been put in place as the department chair in the Department of English. So is that something you've witnessed?
No, not in my department. But I do know there have been cases when a department becomes very dysfunctional, and so an outside person, either from outside a department or outside a university, is sort of sent to babysit.
That's not a good sign.
Not a good sign.
And John, you've seen this.
I have. In fact, I was invited once by my dean to be chair of a language department. I won't name the language department, but it was a language I didn't speak.
Oh.
Because it was having trouble. It was really dysfunctional. And I declined because when I realized that the dean had in mind that I would continue to chair the American Studies Department at the same time. So I would be chair of two departments, and I just didn't think that was a good idea. So.
Well, and I can just imagine that it would be a terrifying job to become chair of a department that you're not intimately acquainted with,
right.
That's obviously in trouble. That's just inviting a whole basket of problems.
And in this case, your colleagues could speak a language you don't understand, sort of like, you know, those people who grew up in Yiddish-speaking homes where their parents spoke Yiddish when they didn't want the children to know what they were talking about. So you'd be in that position, I think, as the chair of that department.
Well, what does it mean to be a department chair? I've always thought, well, that seems like a tremendous honor. So, John?
No, it is an honor. I won't say it, you know, I didn't take some pleasure in the visibility, I suppose, of it. But, you know, a department chair has to really care about other people's stuff more than his or her own, at least for the time you're a chair. It's your job to sort of expedite things for your colleagues and for the students in the department, and to sort of not pay so much attention to your own particular interests. So your own intellectual scholarly life sort of is on a hold when you're doing that job, if in a big department anyway. Smaller departments, maybe it's different. But if you're chairing English, which here is 50 or so people and 100 graduate TAs and so on, it's a pretty full-time job.
How long does the chairship normally last? Is that a limited appointment?
It is, and that's changed since I became a member of a faculty. And when I first started teaching in the late 60s, it was pretty common for people to be heads and to have a lifetime appointment. They were like Supreme Court justices. but that really has changed, and now the terms are 3 years usually, and some people do two. I did two terms, mm-hmm. in English. So you don't have that same kind of a gerontocracy that ran departments for many years.
Well, and Julie, in your letters about department chair, I get the impression that at least in this English department, Fitger he's trying to avoid becoming chair. He's trying to avoid having someone that he doesn't want to work under be the chair. But it kind of gives you the impression that everybody's keeping their heads down and hopes that they don't get pinpointed to be the next chair.
Yes, if it's the sort of idea where, you know, ask for volunteers and everybody takes three giant steps backward. And whoever wasn't listening ends up nominated. But no, Fitger works in a department where no one wants to be chair, in part because the department is so dysfunctional. So they have this outsider, a sociologist, who steps in and is immediately resented.
And it sounds like, I mean, they're almost afraid to make eye contact with anyone in case they might get named chair if they look at the wrong person at the wrong time.
Yes, and everyone in the novel, all the professors are head down in their offices, lights off, hoping no one will find them in order to assign them any sort of task.
Well, and of course, that leads into how Fitger is communicating with everyone, because a lot of these, I mean, these are letters, these are emails, some of them are electronic forms that he tries to fill out. Can you give me an idea how many letters of recommendation you're asked to write, Julie?
I think I, you know, some of them are simple revisions of earlier letters, or a student applies to law school and then decides, forget it, I'm going to apply to business school instead. So you tweak the letter. But I would say, you know, at least 50 a year. I read many more letters than I write, because once we serve on admissions in creative writing, I think last year we had 500 people apply to our grad program. Each of the 500 needed to submit 3 letters, so that's 1,500 letters right there for, you know, admission season, which is January, February. And it's hard to keep up with them all, reading them and writing them. There's so many.
And I'm sure there's a formula to them.
There's a bit of a formula, but I think if you really want to write a strong letter for a student, you want to break out of the formula a little bit.
But not necessarily as far as Fitger broke
out. As Fitger breaks out, no.
I always wished I'd received letters like Fitger's, because they would be amusing, as most of them are. All of them are not otherwise.
Right. So when you're a department chair, John, how many letters of recommendation do you think you're requested to write?
Oh, I'm not even sure I can make a decent estimate. 100, 150. They have to be written, as the book suggests, for every single tiny jot of academic life. So if you're going to be nominated to be an assistant in the library, or you're trying for a job as an assistant in the library, you have to have 3 letters of recommendation, so on and so forth.
Right. Or work-study student. Some of my favorite letters in the book, and we'll play another one read by Dennis Reese here, are letters of recommendation that Fitger needs to write for his, I assume, undergraduate students for the jobs that they will hold while they're going through school. And this is a wonderful letter, pardon me, from October 16th to Avengers Paintball Incorporated in Lakeville, Minnesota. Here's the letter.
Esteemed Avengers, this letter recommends Mr. Alan Trent for a position at your paintball emporium. Mr. Trent received a C- in my expository writing class last spring, which, given my newly streamlined and increasingly generous grading criteria, is quite the accomplishment. His final project consisted of a 10-page autobiographical essay on the topic of his own rageful impulses and his often futile attempts to control them. He cited his dentist and his roommate as primary sources. Consider this missive a testament to Mr. Trent's preparedness for the work your place of business undoubtedly has in store. Hoping to maintain a distance of at least 100 yards, Jason T. Fitger, professor of creative writing and English, Payne University, teach till it hurts. By the way, my all-inclusive calendar invites me to celebrate Diwali today.
All right, so that's a letter from the novel, Dear Committee Members, a novel by Julie Schumacher. Julie Schumacher is here with us today, and also John Rayburn, who's professor emeritus of American Studies at the University of Iowa. He was also a professor of English, chair of both departments during his career. And we'd love to hear from you as well. I know you have stories, so give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, I mean, those letters, Julie, must have just been so much fun to write.
I had a great time writing this book. I don't always have a great time writing. You know, writing is sometimes wonderful and sometimes awful. But this book was pretty much fun all the way through.
Did you find that these letters would just pop into your head while you were doing other things?
Yeah, they did. And I, my husband is an academic as well, and he and I would rack our brains at the dinner table thinking of other things that Fitger could encounter. My husband read an early draft of the book, and first he laughed, and then he looked at me and said, "Are you really that angry?" So it was quite enjoyable, cathartic.
So also, I know something that, I mean, people in all walks of life and all businesses struggle with this when they're asked to write a letter of recommendation for someone that they don't really want to recommend. They struggle with the, do I tell them, no, I can't write that letter of recommendation? Do I write a tepid letter of recommendation? Do I tell the truth in a letter of recommendation? Does anybody give any academics, I mean, any ethical advice about this kind of thing, John?
I never heard any. I used to give some advice when I was chair. There were a few people in that I knew of that really just turned down students. And I said, you can't do that. This is part of the job, is to write letters of recommendation. On the other hand, if a student has really done poor work for you, you have to say, I cannot write you a strong letter. You should find somebody that's, you know, going to be able to say something better about you than I'd be able to say, given your performance.
That's a very, very painful thing to say to someone.
It is, but it's less painful than to send a damning letter. Although sometimes students, I was telling one of my colleagues about this, and he had a student who came to him who had failed his course. And he said, I'm going to law school. This is several years after he'd been in the course. And my colleague said, but you failed the course. I can't write you a good letter. He said, well, they just require three letters, so please go ahead and do it. The guy just – it was like a – he thought it was like, you know, supplying a statement of purpose for your application.
Oh,
and
goodness.
They just checked it off. If you had three letters, they didn't bother reading them, which may be true. A guy at the law school, not here, but at my first school where I taught at Michigan, told me that basically – they never read the letters, that they only paid attention to the LSATs.
Oh, my
goodness.
Why require the letters?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and I know I have heard in a number of occasions of professors just asking students, okay, you know, you want a letter of recommendation. You write it. I'll read it. Mm-hmm. And I'll sign it.
Yeah.
And is that common?
I saw a hilarious email one day that came across my computer that said, dear faculty member, I am looking for someone to write a letter of recommendation for me. My professor has asked me to, you know, submit a letter that he or she will then sign, but I'm not a very good writer, and so I'm willing to pay any of you to write a letter for me, which I will then submit to this other professor for his signature. That was one of the weirdest things I had ever seen.
Oh, my goodness. Well, one of my favorite letters in the book, and we didn't record this one, but this is a letter of recommendation to, I guess, an online magazine. And it says, Dear C.R. Young, Ms. Tara Tipani knocked at my door this morning and with the air of a woman wearing diamonds and furs entered the icy enclosure in which I work, perched at the edge of my red vinyl chair and urged me to respond to your second email request for a recommendation as she dearly hopes to be hired as assistant editor of Celebrita Online. I demurred. Pressed, I reminded Ms. Tipani that a year ago I gave her a well-deserved F in my intermediate fiction class. She chuckled and put a manicured little paw on my forearm as if the two of us were sharing a wonderful joke. Don't worry about that, she assured me. I just need a letter.
This is like the law school applicant just mentioned.
Right.
Exactly, exactly. And of course, it gets even better because she got an F because she plagiarized. But we would love to have you join our conversation. We're talking about the world of academia, the new novel, Dear Committee Members by Julie Schumacher. And William is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, William.
Hi, Sheridan. How are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I just wanted to insert, I don't know if anybody has read the last article in the current weeks of Time magazine by Joel Stein, and I just love Joel Stein. He is so amusing as a writer, and he talks about the inequitable difference between, because he got a degree in English and a master's in English, and so he was basically saying that, you know, the humanities, specifically the non-STEM departments, are really facing a decline. And anyway, he had lunch with a former, classmate, and so they're sort of comparing notes, and he basically just had to justify the fact that he got an English degree because it was, number one, easy, but anyway, it was a very amusing article. I don't know if anybody in your panel had read it or not, but I just wanted to insert that he, in the end, he's basically saying that, yes, humanity degrees are important and, a part of the Renaissance and everything, but he adds some of his humor in there, too, and it's very funny. I don't know if anybody's read the article, but basically talking about academics and the importance of having a not just STEM majors, but non-STEM majors, people that are getting English degrees, and they have value too. So,
well, William, thank you so much for calling. And I'm, that's a theme that we touched on earlier. It's certainly not a new theme for professors of the humanities and many people in the humanities. John?
I think I would like to raise the question of the value of letters of recommendation, because Julie is absolutely right. It's a plague that is now descended upon us like the locusts on Egypt. And you're asked for letters for all kinds of things. And in my judgment, they're not usually very valuable. And I've read hundreds and thousands of them, as Julie obviously has. And for admissions to graduate programs and for positions in the department, they always come with letters.
We'll take a short break. We'll get back to this conversation in just a moment. I'm talking with John Rayburn, who's Professor Emeritus of American Studies at the University of Iowa, and Julie Schumacher. She teaches creative writing at the University of Minnesota, and her latest novel is called Dear Committee Members. She'll be reading tonight at 7 p.m. at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with Julie Schumacher. She is a novelist. Her latest novel is called Dear Committee Members. It's written entirely through letters of recommendation from a disgruntled English professor at a small college in the Midwest. She herself teaches creative writing at the University of Minnesota, a large university in the Midwest. John Rayburn is also here, Professor Emeritus of American Studies at the University of Iowa. He was also a professor of English and chair of each department at different times. And we'd love to hear from you as well this hour, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we were talking about sort of a lack of value that a lot of people feel about the humanities. And I want to play another letter from the book that sort of gets to that subject in a way, of course, in a very humorous way. But this one is written to an internship coordinator of a state senator. And of course, the address that Professor Fitger chose to put on it is the Halls of Power. But here's the letter.
Honorable internship coordinator, this letter's purpose is to recommend to you, in the capacity of unpaid labor, presumably licking envelopes and knocking on doors, Melinda Heisman, a student in my multicultural American literature class. Melinda is an A student, a wide-eyed, earnest individual who will undoubtedly benefit from a few months spent among the self-serving pontificates in the senator's office. Melinda is intelligent, she is organized, she is well-spoken. Given her aptitude for research, unlike most undergraduates, she has moved beyond Wikipedia. I am sure that she will soon learn that the senator, his leathern face permanently embossed with a gruesome rictus of feigned cheer, has consistently voted against funds for higher education and has co-sponsored multiple narrow-minded backwater proposals that will make it even more difficult for her to repay the roughly $38,000 in debt that the average graduate of our institution inherits, along with a lovely blue tassel, on the day of commencement. Melinda's final essay in my class, here it is on my desk among a cast of thousands, is a windy but assiduous reading of Jamaica Kincaid's At the Bottom of the River. The essay demonstrates strong writing skills and rigorous thinking. Allow Melinda the privilege of laboring in your office for nothing. She'll probably continue to work nights as a barista in the coffee empire. And I am confident you'll be making, though perhaps not in the ways you might have intended, a remarkable contribution to her education. With all best wishes, I remain your devoted public servant, J. Fitger, Professor of the Lost Arts, Payne University.
Yet another letter from Dear Committee Members by Julie Schumacher. And Julie, now, Jason Fitker has a lot of problems, obviously, but he does genuinely care about literature. He seems to be genuinely frustrated by the future that he envisions for a lot of his students. Is that something that you talk about with your colleagues?
Oh, sure. And this goes back to the previous caller asking about or talking about the STEM fields versus the humanities. I think parents who are paying for their children's education worry a lot about, you know, what financial return or what job security might be waiting for their child after this huge outlay of money. But I like Professor Fitker, I thoroughly believe in the humanities and the arts. There's a letter also in the novel in which Fitker says that, you know, the literature student has learned to inquire and question and interpret and critique, to research and analyze, whereas the computer major, he says, is a technician like a plumber clutching a single shining box of tools. And I think it's, at least in the humanities, colleagues of mine and I have talked about, you know, the broad applicability of the humanities versus an attempt to guess what job one might get and to zero in on one small aspect of an education in order to try to fit into a narrow marketplace that might change after graduation. So, like Fitker, I totally want to champion the humanities. I want to champion my students. I want to stick up for arts and letters in education.
Another thing that really came through in the novel is that, at least in Fitker's world, although there are many colleges, there are many universities, academia is a small world, and he finds himself sending letters to people that he encountered many years ago. He finds himself relying on these people for the students that he genuinely cares about and champions, people who may not like him because of things he's done in the past. But is that something that you've found, Julie, that the world of academia is more limited than you would imagine? You encounter a lot of the same people over and over again?
Sure, you do. It's I suppose, like other worlds. If you were in the you know, the financial world, or you're in you know, the athletics or some other particular environment, eventually you find yourself talking to the same people over and over. There's an insularity about academia, but it can be a kind of wonderful insularity as well. I think almost every job or discipline must have its absurdity that one could write about in a novel, but this is the absurdity I'm familiar with,
right?
And so that's where the novel began.
Well, and John, did you find in your many years in academia that it was a surprisingly small world in some ways?
It is, and one thing that academics do that maybe other professions don't, although I know they do it too, but we meet in conventions every year, and some multiple ones, actually. Sometimes people will go to six or eight meetings during the course of a year, and of course the people in their discipline and their sub-discipline are there, and they see them fairly regularly. So it's a fairly small world where there's a good deal of intimacy. I mean, if you're a medievalist, there are, what, four or five dozen people who are sharing your interest in the whole world, or the whole country anyway.
Well, and throughout these letters, we learn a little bit about Fitker's past, and he attended something called the seminar when he was young. And Julie, both John and I looked you up because the seminar sounds so very similar to what we call the workshop around here, although you are not a graduate of the University of Iowa Writers Workshop. Was there an inspiration there?
Well, I wanted him to be at a workshop-like place, but I didn't want it to be the Iowa Workshop. I wanted it to be a fictional highbrow place for fiction writers in particular. So it is not a particular place, but a lot of people have asked me, is this the Iowa Workshop?
I'm sure a lot of people have asked you that question. Well, and one of the things that Fitger has done in his past, he was very eager, as most people are, to be successful in his career and as a novelist. And he wrote a popular book, which was a loosely veiled, I guess, autobiographical book about his experience at the seminar. And we get the impression that a lot of people came off in a not very flattering light in that book. And I've seen this play out already. You know, I've seen people sort of sell out their friends and colleagues for broader success. And of course, he's been hoisted on his own petard because now many years later, his career has stalled out. But this must be something to watch. I'm sure you've seen that happen, John.
Oh, I think this is—I'm sorry.
No, Julie, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think this is the danger of being related to or hanging around with writers. You always worry that you might show up somewhere. In fact, my sister made me some fake business cards one day that said, Julie Schumacher, writing about other people's unusual families.
Nice.
Because my siblings are usually concerned. What's the new book about? Is it about a family, perhaps?
I think Julie's next writing project ought to be writing Fitger's first novel. Because we're all curious about that. You know, it's a scandal. And I'd like to know what he said.
Absolutely. And so, John, you've seen people go through this, I'll bet.
Oh, sure. Yes. Yes. That show up in other people's novels. And one of my colleagues, Ed
Folsom.
Or even Folsom,
in Atlantic articles, that kind of thing.
Frank Conroy just took Ed Folsom, who is one of our colleagues, took his name and gave it to a character in the novel who's not at all like Ed, but there's his name. And Frank said, "Well, I kind of like that name."
Oh my goodness! And of course, Fitger goes even farther. I mean, in a desperate attempt to reignite his writing career, he also blows up his marriage.
Yes, yes, and he makes a bad mistake at work by hitting reply all in an email and offering some intimate information about his relationship with a lover on campus. That doesn't work very well for him either.
No.
But he's technologically inept, which I confess I am as well. He struggles with the online recommendation form.
Right, which I think is really funny because he hates writing these letters of recommendation. And, of course, these online forms are supposed to streamline the process so you don't have to write a traditional letter of recommendation.
They make it harder.
Terrible.
They're terrible. And each one is different. You need a new password, a new way of logging on, a new way of fitting your opinion of a person into these tiny little check boxes.
Yeah.
I don't like those things at all.
A little autobiographical part of the book, huh, Julie? All right, let's get back to the phones. Ryan is on the line in Marshalltown. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. So I went to a small liberal arts college where I had a theology professor that I greatly respected. And, well, now he dominates my Facebook news feed. And one thing he's been mentioning lately and lamenting, really, is sort of the transformation of higher education into more of a business model and students being transformed into more consumers and having consumer expectations instead of, you know, like looking at return on investments and things like that, which causes him some great consternation. And I'm wondering if that's something that you've seen that you also lament that is in the book and I should read it because of that, or I should, you know, send it to him. That kind of thing.
You should definitely send it to him.
Send him two copies.
So right. In fact,
everyone on your Christmas list should get one, right, Julie?
Well, I think there is an indirect discussion of issues, even such as grade inflation, which does, I think, cause students to consider themselves customers or clients. There's a lot at stake. You'll have students. I've often had students come to me and say, "But I can't get a B plus in your class. I need to go to law school. I have these loans. You don't understand. I must get into med school. My family's counting on it. And I understand the difficulty that they're experiencing, but that's not how education works. You shouldn't hand over an A because somebody needs to get into medical school.
John?
Absolutely agree with that. Yeah. I mean, and students will say things like that to you, and you just have to say, that's not what I do. You know, I judge the work you do, and that's the way it goes.
Mm-hmm. Is there pressure sometimes from higher up in that?
Never.
Never.
No. And I have to say, I'm not much of a fan of collegiate athletics, but I've never been pressured by them either here. I think maybe there are people that have been, but I certainly have never been and never had any personal experience of it with people I know. But
no, I haven't either. Only really with the students themselves,
yeah,
saying,
right,
you know, please, I can't have this be. Right. It can't work for me.
Right. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for your call. And Julie, were you worried at all that you might be pulling a Fitger in writing this book and people recognizing themselves?
I don't think there's anyone recognizable in here. I wasn't using my colleagues or other people's colleagues. I was really using my own frustration about certain situations, but there are no recognizable people in here other than maybe me.
Well, and who would you be?
Fitger.
Okay. You don't sound much like him.
My uncensored evil twin.
Did you ever think about a female Fitger?
People ask me why I've made him male, because I'm a female author, and I don't have a perfect answer for that other than that I wanted him to be a traditionalist and someone who had expectations that he would be powerful, and he sees his power dwindle right in front of his eyes.
We have this email from Pam, which actually on the subject of power. She says, I worked for 14 years in academia as an administrative assistant to 3 departments. One department was so dysfunctional that members did not trust each other at all. So when a vote had to be taken for the next chair, everyone sent their vote to me and I delivered the results. I realized later that I could have skewed the results and watched the mayhem that would have followed. But sometimes in these academic departments, a lot of power gets put in the hands of an administrative assistant.
Mm. Yes.
Yes.
Yes,
that's true.
I think that's true.
There's your next novel, I guess, Julie.
That's right.
So, you know, in sending up letters of recommendation, in many ways, they are a necessary evil because I'm not sure what else we would do. I mean, John, you brought up what is the value of these letters of recommendation. How would you get around it?
Well, I just don't think they're very useful, so I would eliminate them, frankly. I mean, we always have other kinds of evidence when students send papers that they've written when they're applying for graduate school. People applying for jobs send their dissertations or, you know, books or what have you. There's plenty of evidence that is available that's much more reliable than the letter that you might get from Professor So-and-so.
Or I think even a list of phone numbers. If someone is a finalist for a position, here's the list of people you can call on the phone.
Right.
And I think phone calls often are more candid than emails. There's no written trail.
Yeah.
So, Julie, have your students stopped asking you for letters of recommendation now that you've published this novel?
No, actually, while I've been traveling on book tour, I've had several requests.
Well, Julie Schumacher, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Julie Schumacher is the author of the new book, Dear Committee Members, a very funny novel. She'll be reading tonight at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. She also teaches creative writing at the University of Minnesota. John Rayburn, thank you.
Thank you very much.
John Rayburn, Professor Emeritus of American Studies at the University of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, a conversation with primatologist Jill Preetz. She's just returned from Senegal. We'll find out what she saw this summer in Senegal. This is Talk of Iowa.